WBAI New York. We'll have to leave it right there. That was an encore presentation of Equal Rights and Justice with Mimi Rosenberg, the first hour of that presentation. It's just about 10 a.m. Coming up next is Ecologic. Right after that at 11, yours truly hosts Living for the City. Please stay tuned.
É como a pluma que o vento vai levando pelo ar. Voa tão leve.
The paved paradise put up a parking lot with a pink hotel, a boutique and a swinging hot spot. Seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone. It'd be paradise, put up a parking lot.
If they keep on polluting the earth and telling where we're gonna plant our seed, it makes me wanna cry. For the children, makes me wanna cry.
Solar power, ever see a windmill go? Feel the pull of an ocean wave, the heat from a volcano. There's so much we could do, there's so much we could know, if we listen to the earth.
Welcome. Glad you can join us for Ecologic. Clear air and water are healthy air and water. Every day is Earth Day. Ken Gale is not able to join us today, but has co-produced the show as always and will be back next week.
I'm Sally Gellert.
And I'm Donna Stein. This is Ecologic for Wednesday, January 3rd, 2023. Happy New Year.
2024.
Oh, my gosh. 2024. Yeah, that's the first time I've done that.
When your air and water are clean, thank an environmentalist. If not, become one. Enough said.
Ecologic has a different format this week. We begin the year with some members of our collective bringing their thoughts about current issues, some of which will be expanded in future episodes. Welcome. Please introduce yourselves, JK.
Yes, hi, I'm J.K. Canepa, and I'm a member of Sane Energy Project and the More Gardens Coalition. That's enough.
And Martha?
Hi, I'm Martha McClintock. I'm with Plant Native Northwest Bronx and a longtime member of Greenpeace.
And Tim?
Yeah, I'm Tim Keating, former director of Rainforest Relief and currently consulting on sustainable wood and wood alternatives with Earth Built.
And Charlie?
Charlie, you're muted.
All right, Charlie is muted.
All there right, now go. I'm unmuted. Now I'm unmuted. I got the right buttons there. I'm Charlie Olson, the person who... I'm from the Environment TV, who does a lot of videography and audio, and here I made the mistake and love to be a member of the great Ecologic Collective.
Thanks.
Right. And all everybody on the show today are Ecologic Collective members. Our first story today is from JK Canepa. Hey, JK.
Hey there. All right. So diving right in, recognizing that New York State and city, our largest source of greenhouse gas emissions come from our buildings, from heating our homes, heating our cooking gas dryers. A bill was passed in 2022 called the Utility Thermal Network and Jobs Act, long name, Utensia. It requires the seven largest investor-owned utilities in the state to implement something called thermal energy networks. We call them TENS, T-E-N-S. And there would be pilot programs supervised by the Public Service Commission that included at least one disadvantaged community. The utilities can build up to five. If they do five, at least two of them have to be in disadvantaged communities. And they, what's a thermal? Non-combustible fluids to transfer heat in and out of buildings without emitting any greenhouse gases. In other words, using water. Water that don't run gas or oil. Where the electricity comes from to power these pumps can either be an on-site source or from your local utility. And the good side of all this is that, first of all, the Build Public Renewables Act was passed. It was really hard to get it through to give the New York Power Authority, which is a state agency that's a publicly owned utility, the power to create their own power and move towards renewable energy. And that the energy needed to run a thermal energy network is so much less than the energy needed to produce heat from gas, electric heater. So you can think of it as a refrigerator that feel all that heat that's coming out. A thermal energy network harvests that heat and shares it with neighboring buildings. It harvests heat that goes up the chimney or out the windows. It's all stored in hydronic pipes, that's water, in what we call a heat sink. That could be under a river, under a reservoir, a sewage treatment plant, a swimming pool, all in pipes, of course. Heat sources are the other side. That's part of the balancing act, and they include the freezers, the backs of freezers in supermarkets, includes the heat in the subway system and all the appliances we use. The jobs part of this bill means that gas workers who've lost or will may are at risk of losing their jobs as we downsize gas, they'll be the ones eligible for these jobs. And the skills to create a network of pipes that connect buildings to each other and to water bodies are exactly the same skills that pipeline workers already have. In fact, this part of the bill is enthusiastically supported by John Murphy, who's the international rep for the United Association of Plumbers and Pipefitters, giant union. So where are we now? There's a great example, the first one of a retrofit of affordable housing is Amalgamated Housing Co-op in the Bronx. It's the oldest limited equity housing co-op in the United States. They provide affordable housing to almost 1,500 families. So they have two towers. There's over 400 families in those towers that run on gas boilers in their basement. And they decided to go ahead, decarbonize. They're creating a thermal energy network. They're connecting to a senior citizen's home, a community center, a supermarket, a bank building, a pharmacy, and a restaurant. And that's a great example of how the city can go. Sally?
Yesterday morning, there was an earthquake here in New York City, which is always surprising. But we do have faults in the area, under the city and in the Catskills, as well as under the New York Bay. Some are part of the Ramapo Braid, which stretches from Pennsylvania through New Jersey to New York. One of these is a fault that runs below 7th Avenue, another runs under 14th Street and ends under the Con Ed building. Although New York City quakes are generally small, often hardly noticeable, we need to be aware. When the Indian Point nuclear reactors were built, very few people were aware of the two earthquake faults that run underneath it, except for the geologists at Lamont Dougherty Earth Observatory, who were ignored and contradicted in court.
It's eagle season on the Hudson River. Bald eagles mostly eat fish. When the lakes and rivers up north are frozen, they fly south to open water. That's why the Hudson River has eagles during the winter. The colder it is to the north, the more eagles we get here. Yay! If you are on the Metro North Hudson, keep an eye out over the Hudson River for bald eagles, especially near Croton Point, and they have been a lot in Yonkers lately. The Hudson is salty down here and does not freeze over anymore as it did many decades ago. Sometimes there are ice floes with eagles perched on them looking for fish. I've seen ice floes with a eagle on it as I go up the Hudson on the train. Croton Point Park has an eagle festival the first weekend of February. Please try and get there.
Water is life. We all remember that chant from the Dakota Access Pipeline fight. And indeed, we're dependent on clean water to stay alive. Ecologic has covered a lot of water issues, including the Crunch Nestle campaign to fight Nestle Poland Springs draining aquifers across the country, bottling public water for private profit. That campaign was successful enough that it gave Nestle a bad name. The water division is now greenwashed, called Blue Trident, in an apparent attempt to end controversy. I recently found a new battle in the fight to protect water for local use. Reading the Hightower Lowdown's email that listed the nonprofit groups that staff and readers are supporting for the new year, under the local organizing category, a reader suggested Stand with Cuyama of Santa Barbara County, California, quote, a feisty local group which is fighting the two biggest carrot growers in the world who are overpumping the groundwater of our valley. The firms, Grimway Farms and Bolthouse Farms, have been overpumping groundwater for years. The Cuyama Valley does not get state public water, but relies on wells drawing groundwater. Local residents, many of whom are small-scale farmers, along with the school district, have addressed the increasing drought conditions by switching to crops that require less water, cutting back on water use, and creating a plan of shared sacrifice for all. Rather than cooperating, the two industrial-scale agricultural corporations are now suing everyone in the county for rights to basically everyone's water, tying them up in what is sure to be an expensive, long, drawn-out, complicated legal battle. In effect, buying the right to continue overpumping while the case works its way through the courts. Stand with Cuyama clearly states on its website that it is not anti-agriculture, that members are themselves farmers, but at small, sustainable scale. They point out the weirdness of Grimway and Bolthouse's lush, well-irrigated green fields in a dusty valley that gets little water. And they call for a boycott of carrots to let Grimway Farms and Bolthouse Farms know that Cuyama Valley is not alone and is not giving in without a fight. They also have a petition on change.org. We have a link on our site, ecoradio.org. If you remember the grapes and iceberg lettuce boycott led by Cesar Chavez, this call will feel familiar. Boycott carrots.
Greenwashing is something we always have to be on watch for. Even when something sounds good, and might be in the beginning, the negative powers that be will find a way to make it look like they are doing good as they co-opt it. It's not always obvious. That is what happened at an earlier COP, the yearly International Environmental Conference. Research by ecologist Thomas Crowther, former chief scientific advisor to the United Nations Trillion Trees campaign, inspired many tree planting campaigns, but also greenwashing. Years later, at COP28 in Dubai, he has regrets. He did not ever expect that a few years ago, he would be begging environmental ministers to stop planting so many trees because corporations and countries use the carbon credits from doing something good, such as planting trees and mangroves, to continue polluting. Not to mention, planting monoculture doesn't make a forest with enough diversity to be self-sustaining for a balanced ecology. As a backlash, natural remediation is being claimed to not help combat climate change, when the truth is there needs to be many strategies to fix the climate crisis, and we need to be diligent to not let the good efforts of ecologists be co-opted. Crowther said December 9th for one of COP28's Nature Day events, the potential of newly created forests to draw down carbon is overstated and damaging when used, as they often are, as avoidance offsets, as an excuse to avoid cutting emissions. His original thesis was global tree restoration is our most effective climate change solution to date. Sounds promising, but after a tree planting craze by companies and leaders eager to look green without actually cutting their emissions, the study later corrected the paper to say tree restoration was only one of the most effective solutions and could suck down at most one-third of the atmospheric carbon. Crowther now says preserving existing forests can have a greater climate impact than planting trees, and he stresses that empowering indigenous communities to protect and nurture woodland. Hoping that forest fuel producers got the point might be fruitless, because after praising Crowther's evaluation of a study, there was boasting about their fossil fuel projects. That's greenwashing, according to Kate Dooley, a researcher at the University of Melbourne, who has studied nature restoration's carbon drawdown. She says, carbon storage in nature is temporary and therefore is not equivalent to permanent fossil fuel emissions. Global emissions continue to increase. Countries and companies need to scale up investments in restoration as well as decarbonization. Simply allowing existing forests to grow to maturity would absorb much more carbon than only restoring destroyed or damaged forests. Both needs to be done.
Tim? Carbon credits are an interesting thing, because while the concept behind them was probably good, it winds up that often they wind up being used for greenwashing, for allowing more pollution to continue rather than solving the problem, you know, working to reduce the emissions. Like, okay, I'll just buy carbon credits and keep doing what I'm doing.
Okay. Well, and you know, we just need to be aware. We're going on to Tim now.
Great. Thanks, Donna. Yeah, Sally, that's certainly something that comes up in the work I do quite often. Carbon credits especially for monoculture plantations is just a debacle. And it's the math that has gone into, or that's, I should say, utilized by the industry, it is so erroneous. And I've been working on a critique now for a couple of years, and getting involved in things like embodied carbon forums and things like that to highlight the reality of logging forests, as well as thinking that you can plant monocultures and that's going to be, you know, better for carbon sequestration than natural forests, leaving it grow. Anyway, in October, the New York Tropical Deforestation Free Procurement Act passed by wide bipartisan majorities in the New York Senate and State Assembly. Sponsored by Senator Liz Krueger and Assembly Member Ken Zebrowski, the bill would have ensured that state and local government procurement doesn't fund tropical deforestation, tropical forest degradation, or associated abuses of the rights of indigenous peoples and local tropical communities. But unfortunately, the bill was vetoed by the governor on December 22nd. If Governor Hochul had signed the bill, New York would have become the first state in the country to end procurement of products contributing to tropical deforestation and forest degradation. There is actually a federal bill that was also introduced. We tend to call it the Schatz bill, that would prevent procurement of products. This is nationally. From illegal deforestation, but it doesn't include all deforestation in the tropics. So there's a lot of support for that bill as well, but it'd be great if it encompassed all deforestation. So as you and some of your listeners know, the issue on which I've focused much of my last 30 years has been slowing the demand for tropical hardwoods. I've been working on this bill, the New York bill, for the last 4 years, and part of the bill would have amended the New York Tropical Hardwood Purchasing Law, which passed in 1991. As passed, the law had major loopholes, which allowed for the continued use of the most heavily used rainforest woods like ipe, kumaru, eki, and greenheart. Without the amendments, New York municipalities continue to use ipe for boardwalks, walkways, benches. MTA continues to use thousands of board feet a year of eki for the railroad ties for miles of subway tracks. And New York City DOT uses massive quantities of greenheart for the decking of the Brooklyn Bridge Promenade and the thousands of pilings replaced every few years in the Staten Island Ferry Docks. The bill would also define tropical forest risk commodities to include soy, beef, palm oil, coffee, cocoa, wood pulp, paper, and wood products. And the Office of General Services would be able to add commodities after the bill passed on an annual basis if they saw fit to do so. It would also require state contractors who deal in tropical forest risk commodities to certify that their products don't drive tropical deforestation or degradation by providing data to the state and the public demonstrating supply chain due diligence to their products' points of origin. It would provide a bidding preference for small and medium-sized businesses, minority and women-owned businesses, and businesses fulfilling state contracts using New York products. Finally, it required a minimum of 2 representatives from indigenous tropical communities within the geographic areas to be part of a stakeholder advisory group. So that was what the bill would have done. The groups that worked on the bill for years at this point have committed to get back at it in this year and bring it up again. We are hopeful that the bill will move through the Senate and then the Assembly very quickly this year and give us time to really revisit getting it signed by the governor. So, just to keep an eye on when this bill is reintroduced so you can help give calls to the governor's office and give calls to any of your assembly members to sponsor, co-sponsor, and support the bill, any of your senators to do the same.
Okay.
All right. Thank you. Yes. Keep calling the governor. Is there any chance of an override of a veto?
I don't think so because of the numbers of people that voted. We actually haven't looked at that, but I think it was probably a non-starter just because.
Yeah, that's too bad.
I voted for
That is always what we want to do at Ecologic is to give our listeners something that they can do. And is there, and if we'll put in the, on our website, different ways that people can contact, but is there any bill information that you have right now that you can tell our listeners to call on?
Yeah, because the bill has yet to be introduced this year, again, it was just vetoed in December 22nd. So there's not yet a new bill introduced. So I can give the listeners the old bill numbers, but they're still going to have to. Those aren't going to be valid. It's going to have new numbers this coming year. Just look for the New York Tropical Deforestation Free Procurement Act.
All right.
And certainly we'll keep in touch in terms of when the bill is reintroduced. Most likely it'll come up in the Senate first. Because the staunchest supporter is Senator Liz Krueger.
Right. We're talking about carbon credits and how they can be misused, and there are other things that you have to watch the source and know what's good, what's not good. Martha, you found an interesting story recently
about the film,
The Climate Museum.
Oh, the Climate Museum. All right. So, yes, there was a write-up about the Climate Museum in the New York Times recently, last week. And I recommend that people go. I mean, I've gotten some stats about
concerns.
Pardon me?
We have some concerns, but you got to check it for yourself, right?
Well, yeah. I think that my main takeaway from their prior exhibit, their current exhibit is called The End of Fossil Fuel, and I'm anxious to see it. So the prior exhibit, I took a friend in there and pointed her to a wall, took her by the shoulders and said, look, Americans are concerned about climate change by a 2-to-1 margin. But, the media sort of feeds us data saying that that's not the case and that we're the underdogs. And it makes us feel defeated and powerless, which is what the oil and gas industry wants us to feel. So, I mean, it was immediate relief for my friend to see that by a 2-to-1 margin, we're in the majority. And I think that's powerful. I don't expect it to be Manchester, England with the history of radicalism. I just want there to be a source for people to go and take at least minimum actions and get engaged. I think that my hunch is that they will be inspired. And there's usually a guest book. So if you find something objectionable that, you know, they're promoting something that you're not in agreement with, I think that it's appropriate to put that in the guest book. So the museum is open Wednesdays to Sundays from 1 to 6. It's located at 105 Wooster Street and in Soho. It is a pop-up museum, so it's due to be at that location until April 28th.
And, you know, we talk about greenwashing a lot on the show, and we need to be diligent about greenwashing. And the Climate Museum has some really important exhibits and where we can recommend people going, but we can also let you know that you watch out for the backing and you find out why certain things were not said and certain things are said. So you go with, you go to get the information that you need, but know that they were on what we feel is the wrong side of the Governor's Island struggle right now. There has been disagreements with, they're not okaying some very important information that we feel should be included, but nevertheless, it's still great to have the conversation going about climate, to have information that is good. So nothing is perfect.
Right. Meet people where they are and pull them toward us.
Right. That is right.
Thank you for bringing that up, Marcia.
Yeah. One of Ken's past WBAI shows has been transcribed and is in print. His interview with Steve Gerber, environmentalist and comic book writer, mostly for Marvel, is in the latest issue of Comic Book Creator. They even included some listener phone calls. Yeah, they even include some listener phone calls. How do you do that in a magazine?
Okay, so you're listening to Ecologic, WBAI's premier environmental show, right here on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org. I'm Donna Stein.
I'm Sally Gellert. Ecologic covers every environmental issue. We help educate and activate our listeners. This makes your donation to us one-stop donating. We help many groups to get the word out. When you become an Ecologic BAI buddy for just a few dollars each month, 10 or more, you become a sustaining member, which gives the station the support it's need.
We hope WBAI listeners, that's you, understand that radio might seem free, but we need you, the listener, to help keep this station going. There are many ways to donate. By getting one of our many premiums on the website, becoming a BAI buddy in the name of Ecologic, or just a straight donation. Becoming a buddy gives the station a reliable idea of just how we can budget expenses. So that is always appreciated. And stating your buddyship is in the name of our show helps keep us on the air. Even if you are already a buddy, you can sign up for an Ecologic buddy spot. That's up to you.
We're pleased to have some of our collective members with us today. They're all active environmentalists and have always good information to share. WBAI gives us the opportunity to bring you perspectives that you won't find anywhere else. WBAI is listener-supported, locally managed radio, and we need you to be a part of this station so that we can keep bringing you exceptional content. Please ensure that Ecologic and WBAI can survive. Your support makes it happen.
Donating as a buddy is an easy way to make a bigger donation spread out over a year, and it helps the station plan. Free speech radio depends on listener members to be a part of the process. Your funding helps keep us on the air. We rely on you just as you rely on Ecologic to bring you the latest environmental news.
BAI is trying to clear as much debt off the books as possible to start the year with a clean slate. With a donation of $35 or more, you can choose a gift from one of our premium selections. Go to give2wbai.org and search for Eco-Logic.
And we have lots of premiums. And of course, even a one-time donation of any amount will help BAI pay our monthly bills, whether or not you select a premium. You can boast that you helped keep WBAI on the air. Get a membership in the name of a family member, no matter what their politics are.
Help keep BAI on the air, serving our communities. Signing up as a BAI buddy makes donating an easy part of your monthly budget and helps the station with a regular source of income to pay our bills. You can visit WBAI.org and click the green BAI Buddy sign with the peace dove and sign up through our safe, friendly portal with thanks from us at Ecologic and WBAI. Or call 212-209-2950 and say you want to be a BAI Buddy for any amount in the name of Ecologic or all BAI shows. Or make a donation today. Whatever works best for you is more than welcome and received with gratitude. Just a few minutes of your time lets us know that you value independent, progressive news, information, and entertainment, and keeps the lights on and the transmitter transmitting.
If you want, you can send a check or money order for your membership and our premiums. Mail to WBAI Radio, Attention Membership, 388 Atlantic Avenue, Brooklyn, New York, 11217. That's 388 Atlantic Avenue, Brooklyn, 11217. Here is Joel Landy, another Ecologic Collective member who wrote and performs Methane.
You've heard of natural gas, but it has an unnatural name. Methane. Cause if you knew what it was, you would not want to play in this game. Methane. Let's get real, here's the deal. Natural gas is methane. Methane is a gas with a low molecular mass. Methane, it gets into the air when oil rigs flare with methane. Methane, and it comes from the loss of tundra permafrost. Methane, it's a greenhouse gas leak, and it's what frackers seek. It's methane. There's less ice, climate change is the price of methane. Why is methane bad, like the weathered knee had? It's methane. Once it turns light to heat, there's no way to compete with methane. Hurricanes, human pain, it's insane. It's methane. So when corporate types want more drilling and pipes, think methane. Don't be fooled by the lie, keep it out of the sky, methane. Your kids will ask you what you did for methane. It's a fact that you can't get it back with methane. Don't be part of that marketing sham for methane. Now you know, save the earth. It's not worth methane.
That was Joel Landy singing his song, Methane. You're listening to Ecologic, WBAI's premier environmental show, right here on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org. I'm Donna Stein.
And I'm Sally Gellert. Now we're back with the Ecologic Collective, and Charlie Olson has some information on how to get involved and how to get inspired.
Hi, I'm Charlie Olson, a member of the Ecologic Collective, and I mainly do video and editing of video and audio for Ecologic and 40 or so other environmental frontline direct action grassroots groups. As a videographer, I get the opportunity to experience a number of different individual activists and groups, and I therefore get to be exposed and learn about a much bigger picture of the problems and challenges of the climate chaos that we're living in. Such awareness can be and is quite overwhelming to all of us, but we needn't tackle everything. The most important things to keep in mind are getting involved, staying involved, and organizing. And one of those ways, which I highly recommend, is reading a book by the youth activist who inspired Greta Thunberg, who also wrote the foreword to Jamie Margolin's book entitled Youth to Power, Your Voice and How to Use It. This book is an extremely practical, readable, and enjoyable journey of solutions, which start in the very first chapter with Jamie asking you, the reader, to find your why, to know your own reasons for environmental activism, and to use that self-answer, as that will sustain you when you find yourself all alone and wondering, where's everybody else? Why aren't they here? Why don't they see what I see? All 18 chapters talk about one challenge or problem at a time and its possible solution, with a different young person explaining how they overcame them. This guide of very real solutions doesn't wait until the end of a long book to give us some possibilities or tell us at the end of the book that the next book will offer answers, but gives us concrete life experiences immediately by 18 people in the real world of action, in the real world of trial, mistakes, and failures. One chapter that attracted my attention the most is A Day in the Life of a Teen Activist, which actually goes through a 24-hour day cycle counting sleeping time, school time, homework time, eating time, time with the family and friends, and more. Jamie shows how to fit in activism and the rest of your life so that you, the reader, can see the practical ways of making it happen. Jamie first became aware of climate problems in the second grade, and when she tried to do something, she was told to wait until she was old enough to really be able to cause change. Yeah. She followed that advice and decided in her freshman year of high school that that was her time. At 16 years of age, in the summer of 2018, she finished organizing the International Youth Climate March with the group she founded, Zero Hour, which captured and inspired Greta Thunberg to join in her own country. And a few weeks later, Greta started school striking outside the Swedish embassy. Mm-hmm. And while doing all that, Jamie became a plaintiff in the lawsuit against the state of Washington, suing her own home state for denying her generation's constitutional right to a livable environment. At age 18 in 2020, she wrote and published her book, Youth to Power, a toolbox of possible fixes that needs only our making use of them to make it a reality. I urge you to get this book and devour it and then decide if that's the journey that you want to take, and to recommend it to others or to give the book as gifts to young or old beginning activists. This book is a toolbox, as Greta says, and as Jamie hopes, this book will make your change-making journey a lot more accessible. That's Jamie Margolin, Youth to Power, Your Voice and How to Use It. Get involved, stay involved, and organize. That's what's on my mind these days and most days.
Thanks, that's cool. And while we're on reviews, Martha McClintock has a film review for us.
Yes, Charlie, that sounds like an amazing book. The film I'm going to recommend is also about youth. So it's called Youth v. Gov. So youth, and then V for versus, and gov for government. And it's on Netflix, okay? So it's highly provocative and inspiring, but also heartbreaking, I'll be honest. Youth v. Gov is the story of Juliana v. the United States of America constitutional lawsuit, and the 21 American youth is ages 14 to 25 who are taking on the world's most powerful government. Since 2015, the legal nonprofit Our Children's Trust has been representing these youth in their landmark case against the U.S. government for violating their constitutional rights to life, liberty, personal safety, and property through the government's willful actions in creating the climate crisis they will inherit. In other words, for making it so that they aren't even guaranteed a future. What makes this lawsuit so important, in my opinion, is that so many other laws and policies would have to be enacted in our society to ensure that young people will inherit the earth and a livable planet to which they are entitled. I guarantee that after you see the film, you'll want to know how you can help. There is a take action section on youthvgovfilm.com website, but strangely enough, the stronger list of actions is on the Act Take Action section page of Our Children's Trust website. The first item on that list is an immediate action to join People versus Fossil Fuels Coalition in a coordinated action to directly email Attorney General Merrick Garland, urging him to end U.S. Department of Justice, DOJ, opposition to Giuliana v. U.S. proceeding for trial. I mean, imagine that. It's something so important being stonewalled. It's disgusting. For even greater impact during this critical moment, please call and tweet the DOJ too. After all, why should children have to sue state by individual state for their right to a future? It really is infuriating when you stop and think about it.
Yeah, you know, the youth are really inspiring. We've got the Our Children's Trust. We've got, they have a few lawsuits. They won the one in Montana. Yeah. The national one is ongoing, and there's one in Hawaii too.
Yeah, at the time of the movie was made, they hadn't won anything in Montana. So it was really hard to take the ending, I'll be honest. So I'm glad they're making progress, but it's a huge pity that they should have to do so state by state. That's just too slow.
It is crazy. Although the other thing that's going state by state and which helped in Montana is the Green Amendments. And New York did that a year or two ago. New Jersey, which was one of the first to propose it, is still lagging. It hasn't gone anywhere. We've had Maya Van Rossum on the show before, and hope she'll join us again because she's a powerhouse getting green amendments. And again, it's state by state. And the theory is that if there are enough states, eventually it'll work its way up to the federal level. And then these poor kids won't have to go state by state anymore. Right.
Right.
Now, I would like to make another clarification of Ken's programming that's coming, that he'd like people to know about. In one of Ken's past WBI shows that has been transcribed and is in print, his interview on the radio was with Steve Gerber, who's an environmentalist and a comic book writer, mostly for Marvel. It's in the latest issue of the magazine Comic Book Creator, the transcription of the radio show. They even included some listener phone calls. A link for the interview is on issue number 33 and will be on our website, ecoradio.org. It's tomorrows.com, tomorrows.com. Now, we have some time for more input from our Ecologic Collective member guests.
Well, I have a little comment. I was thinking when Tim was talking about monoculture forests, which are really terrible and horrible, the one caveat on that, we had blank the name, New York State Pine, talking
Ellis.
About Christmas tree farms. And while that is monoculture and it doesn't help with the animals necessarily, it is a farm crop more than a forest. And so that's one monoculture that we can put up with in small amounts, perhaps.
That was Ellis Roberts from
Ellis Roberts.
New York.
I was wanting to say Pine. Elliot, and I knew that was wrong. Ellis Roberts, yeah.
I think
that was a fun show.
I think a key element of that kind of perhaps a little bit of confusion there is that is the monoculture tree farm, and that's what I'm going to call plantations. I don't call them forests, even though the UN does, which creates this massive subterfuge in the world, including all the numbers for deforestation globally. But what people need to look at is what is that monoculture tree farm in place of? And if it's mm-hmm. in place of another monoculture farm crop, then for sure the tree farm is going to be something of better habitat for certain wildlife in that area than, say, a corn crop or a soybean crop in New York State, perhaps canola or something like that, or ranch land. But if it's in place of a natural forest, which it very often is across the world, then it's absolutely not better for the climate, for wildlife, biodiversity, et cetera, et cetera.
Absolutely. Fair point.
Yep. Yeah. So that's what we've done to drill down place by place and look at these. And it's certainly a huge global issue. As I mentioned, the UN Food and Agriculture Organization considers a forest to be pretty much any collection of trees on that take up half a hectare, I think, or half an acre. And even if it's a monoculture, and even if it's slated for being clear cut to produce pulp for paper, to produce biofuel, whatever. And here's the really worst part of the definition is it includes after the clear cut and it's bare, barren land at that point. If there's an intention to replant trees, doesn't matter how long into the future that intention is, they still consider it a forest by definition, right, and count it as subtracting from deforestation or forest loss. This is really a major, major problem. And when you look at the numbers for deforestation and when this definition was expanded to include tree farms, you see how much actual deforestation is going on that isn't being recorded in the numbers that UN FAO puts out for all countries in the world, actually, use that information. It's really insidious. So deforestation numbers need to be higher than what are published. Finally, UN FAO has started to break out planted forests versus natural forests. And this has been a long, long battle, a 35-year battle to get them to do this. But they still include replanted, human-planted forests as forests. And therefore, when they're planted, they lop that off of the top of the numbers for deforestation for the year. So, Sam,
what did you think about the story on Thomas Crowther from the COP when he spoke at COP28? His original thesis was that planting trees all over the world, the Trillion Tree Project, would be saving the world from to help decarbonization, but he ended up realizing that it was only one small part of the program and that it was being used for greenwashing. And he also railed against monoculture and wanted the increase of indigenous populations to nurture their forests. And right. Because when you plant a monoculture, you're not planting all the other plants and flowers and fruits that the indigenous insects and animals need to thrive on. So you're not bringing back the forest when you do a monoculture.
And not only that, the monoculture is planted to be cut down again. Let's not forget. There are two components of the big broad equation in terms of forests and climate change, forests and global greenhouse gas emissions and uptake. And on the front end of that equation, the big thing that's being missed is land use change for what are termed often embodied carbon, figuring out what the embodied carbon of products is. And so the way the industry uses the middle section of the equation, oh, we're planting this many trees, and then when we cut those down, we replant them. Mm. Totally lops off anything before that as part of the equation. What was destroyed or changed before they got the land, or before they decided or took action to plant this monoculture of trees? And it's a huge, huge number in most cases, because usually what was there before was natural forest. So the destroying or the clearing of the natural forest the first time is never in that equation for figuring out the embodied carbon of the particular products that come from the monoculture trees. The second thing that is lost in this clip, the center clip of the equation, is the tail end of the equation. That is, what happens to the material after the trees are logged and sent through the mill, or, you know, however they're processed, where does that go? And about 50% of it goes to the paper industry. So when you look at where paper is being used, how it's being used, and how it's disposed of, you've got a massive, massive quantity of paper use in the world now is single-use paper, which goes either to the landfill or an incinerator or something like that. When it goes to the landfill as an organic material, it actually generates methane in the landfill. So when you add all of that up, there's absolutely no question that this kind of wood consumption, production, extraction does not make sense from a climate perspective. It's only in the very narrow section of the equation where you can say, oh, we're planting trees, those trees add on carbon, and then that goes into a wood product that is sequestering the carbon.
Thanks so much, Tim. All right. Now, thanks so much, Tim. We got a lot to think about today. It was a great show, but time does fly and it's time to go. So thanks for joining us. You can read more about today's subjects on Ecologic's website, ecoradio.org, and watch for more detailed coverage later in the year. We have information on a wide variety of environmental issues there, and you can find links to our previous shows as well. Look over the site, ecoradio.org, and if there is a new item or show for which you'd like a follow-up or news report, there is a clickable link near the top of the page, just under the promo meme, to email us. And please go to give2wbi.org to become a BAI buddy in the name of Ecologic, or choose a premium.
We're off next Wednesday, January 10th, but we'll be back on the 17th. We'd love to stay in touch with you. So those of you online, please sign up for our email list while you're checking out ecoradio.org. Those of you on Facebook, please like our page. We're at WBAI Ecologic, no dashes. WBAI Community Radio. Okay. There are lots of ways to get involved. Yeah. Of course, we always need your donations. We need your contributions to support everything that makes the broadcast happen. The engineers, electricity, equipment upkeep, rent. Pledging as a BAI buddy now during this show really helps Ecologic especially.
We are always glad to have you with us for Ecologic, live or on the archives. This show will be on the WBAI archives in just 5 or 10 minutes.
Our thanks to our engineer, Michael G. Haskins. We couldn't do this without you. I'm Sally Gellert.
And we have Martha McClintock with us.
Bye, everybody.
Charlie Olson, Environment TV, and Ecologic.
So long. Thanks for having me on. This is Tim Keating.
And I'm Donna Stein. Ken Gale will be back with us on our next show. We will be preempted Wednesday, January 10th, 2024. That's a special anniversary day for WBAI. We're usually here Wednesdays at 10 a.m. between Covert Action Bulletin and Living for the City. Check our website for details. Thanks for being our listeners.
Sun, how bright it shines on the nations of the earth. All who share this thing called life, celebrate each day's rebirth.
So solar power, inexpensive energy. So
This is Bobby Humphrey. You're listening to WBAI New York, 99.5 FM.
WBAI's local station board is holding its next regular meeting through Zoom on Wednesday, January 10th at 7 p.m. There will be an opportunity for public comment as well as a delegates assembly to nominate LSB members to represent WBAI on the Pacifica Foundation's National Board. Again, the LSB meeting is Wednesday, January 10th at 7 p.m. To join the meeting, please call 929-205-6099 and enter this meeting ID, 922-457-2995. The password is 995-995-99. Or use the link on our website, WBAI.org. Click the red square on the left and scroll to WBAI Local Station Board to enter the meeting. Do you have to contribute to WBAI to access the meeting? No, but it would be great if you would.
Randy Credico, host of Randy Credico Live on the Fly on WBAI, inviting you to join us this Friday, January 5th at 3 p.m. for a special edition of Live on the Fly. That is a celebration of the life and work of the renowned, productive journalist, filmmaker, activist, war correspondent, and a very dear friend of mine, John Pilger. That's Friday, January 5th, 3 to 5 p.m., right here on 99.5 FM WBAI Free Speech Radio in the Big Apple.
you're filing taxes, you may be eligible for some pretty unique deductions. For instance, there are write-offs for clarinet lessons. Or if you hired your cat for pest control, apparently there's a tax break for that too. But if you don't think you'd qualify for pet-related deductions, you could just donate a vehicle to WBAI. It's easy, free, and tax deductible. Here's how it works. Call 866-WBAI-CAR. That's 866-922-4227. Or complete the online form at wbai.org/donate-your-car. From there, our vehicle donation support team will take care of everything, including the pickup, sale, and provide you with a donation receipt. If your vehicle sells for more than $500, you'll also receive a 1098C tax form. So, instead of writing off your cat patrol, you can support programs like the Cat Radio Cafe by donating a car, truck, RV, or boat. Call 866-WBAI-CAR or visit WBAI.org.